Well, we reach a pretty low point in the gospel. I mean, it does get lower than this, because obviously we get to the point where Jesus dies upon the cross. But as far as the disciples are concerned, this is about as low as it gets, as far as their understanding has gone. We're well into chapter 8. I've been preaching this since last November. And Jesus has to turn to them and say, "Do you still not understand?" I watched The X Factor last night. That's not something that I normally do on a Saturday night. I don't know if you guys had the privilege of doing that. I'm sure you won't admit to it if you did. I think it's quite brave that I am doing this morning. But we're there and we're watching it. And, there's probably mediocre people, but you never get to see them, do you? Because it's not very good telly. They show you the really good people. And there was one woman on there who was brilliant. And they show you the really bad people, don't they? And these guys walk in with confidence, you know. Yeah, I'm the man. And they stand on this X and they say to you, "Why do you want to be on the X Factor?" And they say, "I've got the X Factor." You know, they might as well say, "This show was invented for me." And then they start singing. And the people, and the judges, they're trying to stop laughing, aren't they? You can see in their faces, they're like... And you know what that's like? When you're in a situation where you really don't want to laugh, the only thing you can think about is laughing. It's like this morning, if one of you said to someone, you know, "Look at his shirt," and you're thinking, "We're in the middle of church, we shouldn't be laughing." And you hear a little, and that's it, you've gone again. And there's this person singing their heart out, and they sound absolutely awful. And these guys are trying to show them that they're just wasting their time. And so they stop singing. And, you know, Simon Cowell, nice as he is, sort of says, "I don't think we've ever seen anything so bad in all the interviews we've ever done on X Factor," or something, you know, as equally terrible. And these people are crushed. And what do? They leave and they see the person, they come out of the doors and they see the person that's interviewing them and they say, "You know, I just never realised I wasn't a very good singer. I'm going to give all that up and I'm going to get a proper job." Only they don't do that, do they? They come out and they say they don't know what they're talking about. "I don't know who they think they are, but you mark my words, I'll be back next year and I'll win this competition." And you just think, you sat there in front of the telly and you think, this must be a setup. Because they are the only person in the world that thinks they can sing. But the problem is, it's not a setup, I don't think. These people actually think they can sing. And they've got what it takes to be famous. And they don't want anybody to take their dream away from them. And you can see the disciples getting to this point. And you want to say to them, don't you? "Do you still not understand? You can't sing." And that's where we are. We're at this point where the disciples have been with Jesus so long, but they still don't understand who he is. The penny still hasn't dropped. And this whole section is about dull understanding, a lack of understanding. Well, I've got 3 points, which you'll be thrilled to bits to hear, I'm sure. The first one is, I just want to look at why this miracle is here. And you may be satisfied with the answer, you may not, but I want to look at why this miracle is here. Bearing in mind that in chapter 6, verses 30 to 44, we've got that great feeding miracle, haven't we? Remember when we looked at it, the feeding of the 5,000. Whenever the feeding miracle is mentioned, people always say, "Remember the feeding of the 5,000? Jesus fed 5,000, 5,000, 5,000. It's always 5,000. And we saw, if you were here, what that shows us about Jesus. It reveals something of him to us. It reveals that he can do what God can do. He miraculously fed people in the desert with bread, just as God had done in the book of Exodus with the people of Israel. He fed them in the desert with bread. And then it came just before the walking on the water miracle, which again showed us that Jesus can do what God can do. And we looked at Job chapter 9, verse 8, which makes the link, which tells us that God is in control of the seas. And I think, looking through this book, and I'm learning probably more than you guys are through the way that I'm looking at this book, that was the height of the revelation of who Jesus is. I don't think it gets any better than that. We've been building up to that point. We have seen, as we've looked through this gospel, who Jesus is and what he has done. So if that is the height, if that's where we get to, with everything as it unfolds and it goes forward, we see him forgiving sin and performing miracles and being able to touch, and the power of the touch goes that way, it doesn't come this way, and all those things contribute. And we get to this point where Jesus feeds 5,000 people and then he walks on water and bang, that's it. We've got our picture of Jesus. Now we have to try and figure out who he is. If that's the case, then why, just over a chapter on, do we have this feeding of the 4,000? Why do we have this here? A miracle not actually quite as impressive as the last one. I mean, if you look at the figures, there were only 5 loaves last time and 5,000 people. There's 7 this time. I mean, it's still a miracle, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to take anything away from it. But you'd think it would be the other way around, wouldn't you? You know, one would be teeing up for the other one. You know, almost like Jesus could do a practice run with 7 loaves and 4,000 people and then get to the 5 loaves and 5,000 people. I think that's probably why it isn't the other way around. Because we shouldn't look at it like that. Because there's nothing wrong with Jesus' ability to be able to do the miracle, is there? So why is it here? Well, as we've seen, Jesus is in different territory. We remember that from last time. We're looking at the goes northwest to Gentile territory. And the Syro, I think, just means coast. So he's in this coastal town of Phoenicia where he meets this woman and she comes before him. And we remember that the foundational verses for understanding the rest of the Bible are really Genesis 12, chapters 1 to 3. And that's helpful to be reminded of that. Where it tells us that through Abraham, God is going to bless all the nations. And we get a hint of that as Jesus goes into Gentile territory. And we're still there. We're still there. And the end of the Galilee mission has effectively ended. Jesus is moving on from there. And now the end of the Gentile mission is effectively ended. Jesus is going to move on from here. So what you've got is at the end of the Gentile Galilee ministry, you've got the feeding of the 5,000. And at the end of the Gentile ministry, you've got the feeding of the 4,000. So it's all nice, isn't it? You've got a feeding miracle at the end. But that doesn't satisfy me. I'm like, well, I don't know why you need a feeding miracle just to tell you it was the end of a particular phase of Jesus' ministry. And that's what the commentaries say, and that's great. But then you think, okay, so we need to think a bit more, don't we? Well, since that walking on water miracle of Jesus, something else has happened, hasn't it? We've actually changed tack in the way that we've been able to look at who Jesus is and we've been able to look at the gospel. Because what was happening, it was all the way up to the point where Jesus walked on water, we were asking the question, who is this? You remember that? And we should still be asking that question now. It doesn't go away. Who is this? But then when we got to chapter 7, verse 1, things changed. And we started to look at that question of, who are we? Do you remember that? We saw that problem of the heart. So from chapter 7 onwards, we're a lot more involved in the story. We're not just stood there sort of looking at it. We become involved with it. We start to realise that list in verse 23 of chapter 7 applies to us. We don't want it to, and we prefer it if it never, and we'd like to push it onto somebody else, but the reality is we're brought into the gospel through that verse. And that's what's going on in this section. We're not particularly looking at who Jesus is here as much as who we are. I think that's what's happening here. Who are we? Jesus is revealing in himself through the things that he's done, and he's also revealing what we're like through the things that we are capable of doing. Then we get this miracle that is used by Mark. Now, as I say, it's not particularly, I don't think, to reveal who Jesus is, because he's already done that with the feeding of the 5,000. I think it's to help us to understand who we are. And I think it's to draw us in and help us to be able to relate to this section in a way that we probably wouldn't normally do so. Because what Mark's doing in this section is he's showing us the slowness of the disciples to understand who Jesus is. That's where it reached, didn't it? Verse 21. Do you still not understand? That was Jesus' question. And that miracle is here to help us to see our slowness. And we're going to come back to that. But first of all, we're going to look at this next episode with the Pharisees. Jesus gets back in the boat after the miracle, and they go back to the other side of the lake, so he's left that Gentile territory. Because what actually happened is he went, I'm trying to see it as you're looking at it, he went northwest, and then it says he went into Decapolis, which is round here, and then back down here. Okay? So now the Sea of Galilee is here, he gets in the boat, and he goes back over to the other side. So he's back in Galilee sort of territory. Alright, so that's where he is. And as soon as he lands, he says, we see in verse 11, the Pharisees came and began to question Jesus. They arrive back in Jewish territory, and the Pharisees have still got this problem that they've got to deal with. You know, Jesus has been away for a while, but all that's done is give them a chance to be able to get their plans in order. I think, well, how can we get rid of this guy? What can we do? So he comes back, and the first thing they do is they go over and they ask for a sign. All right? But we see it's not a genuine inquiry, is it? In verse 11, it says that they came to test him. They just want to get rid of him. And you may think, you know, what more do these guys need? I mean, ask him for a sign. You know, I mean, it's not like Jesus hasn't done anything, is it? I mean, he's done everything. He's done all sorts of the feeding of the 5,000, which they're aware of. All sorts of things have gone on. But I think before we judge too harshly, we need to remember that they are not in the position that we are in. They haven't got this book to read. They're in a place which is called Dalmanutha, which we haven't heard of before and we're not going to hear of again. They could be in a different region, therefore. And it may be that they haven't seen any of the miracles of Jesus. But what we do have is the attitude of their hearts. Because they're still, even if that's the case, they're not genuinely asking for a sign. Because we're told by Mark, aren't we, in verse 11, they were there to test him. They're not interested in being convinced. They don't come with open minds. They're there to trick him. And this is going to happen a lot more in chapters 11 and 12. Things really start to get going when Jesus gets into the temple area between himself and the Pharisees and everyone else that decides that they've got to get rid of him. The hardness of their hearts was such that all they wanted to do with this amazing person was to discredit him. And Jesus shows his frustration with them. He just says, no way, no way are you guys going to get a sign. That is not happening. It's quite strong in the way that it comes across. He sighs deeply. Because remember, he knows our human condition. He knows the problem of our hearts. And he sees it manifesting itself here through these Pharisees. And he sighs deeply at our condition. We are not open to our Creator, the one who knows us best, who has designed us. We would rather trap him than believe in him. So last time, if you were here, we looked at who we could identify with. Did we identify with the woman in a humble approach before Jesus? Or did we identify with the crowd who wanted what they could get from Jesus and then disobeyed him? And again, the question raises itself. Do we identify ourselves with the Pharisees? If there are those of us here this morning who aren't Christians, you know, we may have used this line. Well, if God gives me a sign, then I'll believe. Are you in that position this morning? I think sometimes that can be a genuine thing to say. But sometimes I think we can say it knowing true well that we really don't want God to give us a sign. Because if he does, we'll have to do something about it. We'd much rather keep him at arm's length. So we'll ask him for a sign in the hope that he won't hear us and he won't give us one. Because that's how we are, isn't it? We want to keep God at arm's length. So are we simply unwilling to understand? Is that the place that you find yourself in this morning? Well, that is one response, isn't it, that we see here from the Pharisees. But the second response, I think, affects all of us, whoever we are. It's the response of the disciples. The third point, they are slow to understand. And this is the difficulty we have, I think, with this part of the gospel, is that, you know, we like to sit back, a bit like the X Factor, if you like, and we like to judge it. You know, we like to sit there and we like to think, you know, how could these disciples not have understood by now? You know, I mean, what more do they need? You know, that sort of thing. But they just can't see it. And, you know, this is here to show us that we can't see it either. We watched a lot of telly last night because also You've Been Framed was on just before The X Factor. I don't know if you like that. You know, it's basically laughing at other people's misfortune. I mean, generally, we love it as human people, don't we? You know, we see someone fall over and we have a good laugh. You may just think I'm a bit weird now. Maybe you don't. Actually, yeah. So I was watching this thing and it's all about, you know, people running into things or falling over or whatever. And the commentator comes on and there's a kid playing football in his back garden with his dad. And he said, there's this, one of these rotary washing lines behind the kid. And, you know, you think, yeah, you know what's going to happen. And the commentator says, I'm trying to think why there isn't a rotary washing line on most football pitches today. And with that, the dad throws the ball, and the kid turns around, runs straight through the towel, and bang, straight into the pole and falls down. He says, oh yeah, that's it, I've just remembered. But why does he do that? Why does the kid do that? He turns around, he sees the towel, he goes through the towel. But all he's thinking about is the ball, isn't it? It's all he's thinking about. He goes through the towel and smacks into the post because he can't see it. He can't see the washing line. I mean, it's there, it's plain, we can see it watching the telly, we know what's going to happen, we could write the script. But when we get involved in something, sometimes we just lose a sense of perspective, don't we? We lose this sense of perspective. And we need to draw ourselves into this situation, into this gospel. Right here, we need to identify with the disciples, because that's what Mark is wanting us to do. He's not wanting us to sit in judgment upon them, saying, how stupid could they be? How slow can these guys be? He's getting us to realize that's us. We're slow in our understanding of Jesus. Don't look back and judge these guys. Identify with them. You know, the more you read Mark's gospel, I think the more you've got to admire the honesty of Peter. Because we know, well, we don't know, but it was probable that Peter was Mark's source. That was who he got his stories from. Peter had been there with Jesus. He knew all about them. Mark probably travelled around with him. And then after a while decided to write these things down. All these stories of Peter. And if that's the case, you've got to admire Peter's honesty, haven't you? Because he doesn't try and show himself in a good light. You know, it's not like all the disciples except Peter didn't understand. Is it? It's the disciples didn't understand. There he is. It's real stuff, isn't it? Real life. Do we look at this encounter with Jesus and his disciples and think, you know, if only I'd been there, you know, I would have believed. If only, you know, I would have been in that position and I'd have seen the miracles, then I would have known who Jesus was by now. You know, if we think that, then we're being a bit daft, really. We're being silly. Because we look back at that with all the hindsight that we have, with all our Christian understanding, with the full Bible in front of us. These guys never had that. They had their Old Testaments. They've read the New Testament letters. They were going to write them. So let's not sit in judgment upon the disciples. We see, don't we, that Jesus tells them a parable again. He says, beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and Herod. And we know the power of yeast. It grows and grows and grows. It gets in, it starts, and it does its work inside, doesn't it? In an almost invisible way. That's the attitude that the Pharisees and Herod have. They have their own desires. They have their own glory. They're thinking about themselves rather than God. And we're told not to have that. Beware of that. Beware of wanting our own glory. Beware of wanting to do away with Jesus. Beware of that unwillingness to understand, because there's a big difference between unwillingness and slowness. That's where it ends up with the Pharisees. So Jesus says, beware of that. Jesus' mind is on the most important thing, isn't it? He's thinking of the spiritual implication of the feeding of the 4,000, of what the Pharisees have just said to him. They get back in the boat and they're fed up because they ain't got enough tea. And they're saying, well, verse 16, they discussed with one of them and said, is Jesus telling us off because we haven't got enough bread? They've totally missed the point. They've run straight through the towel and into the washing line. Jesus is saying, think properly about these things. The feeding of the 4,000, the response of the Pharisees. Don't be like the Pharisees and Herod. Realize that I can do more than that, that I'm bigger than that. Don't want to get rid of me, believe in me. Trust me, understand me. Jesus says, you know, how did he say it? I don't know. I don't know how he said it. Why are you talking about having no bread? You know, what's it? Yeah, I don't know. Probably not. Probably not. Why are you talking about having, I don't know. How did he say it? But you see his frustration. Why are you thinking about that? When I'm telling you about something far more important. You know, I'm talking about something that's going to impact eternity, and you're worried about your tea. Do you not do you still not understand? Are your hearts hardened? You see, the reality of the situation is this. They have got Jesus with them, but they aren't really thinking about what that means. Now, let me say that again, because that's the impact on all of us, isn't it? They have got Jesus with them, but they aren't really thinking about what that means. That's the problem with this situation. And it's easily done, isn't it? We are in this situation. We know Jesus is with us because we've accepted him as Lord and Saviour. But we are thinking, or we're not thinking, about what that means in our particular situation. How does that apply? It's not just the fact that we intellectually know somewhere that Jesus is with us because we once prayed a prayer. Is Jesus with you? What does that mean to your situations? What does it mean to your marriage, to the way that you bring up your kids, to the way that you go about your job, to the way that you speak to your friends? Is Jesus with us in what we are doing? Or is he central to what we are doing? You see the difference? Jesus is with us. He promises to be with us. We know he's with us, but don't just let an intellectual understanding of something cover the fact that he should be right in the middle of what we're doing. There's a big difference between the two. They've got the creator of the universe with them in a boat, and they're worried that they haven't brought enough bread along with them. They're not being rebuked for that, are they? Jesus isn't rebuking them because they forgot to bring bread. He's rebuking them because they haven't realized what else they've got. And don't we do this? We focus on what we haven't got rather than what we have so easily. They haven't got enough bread, but they have got Jesus. So let's not sit in judgment on these guys. Let's realize that in the boat that is our life, if we've accepted him and we're trusting him, we have Jesus. How does that work out day to day? How do we understand that in our lives? Do we ever think about it? Other than on a Sunday morning or on a Wednesday, Thursday night at a fellowship group? What difference does it make to us because we have got Jesus? Let's not be like these disciples were there. They learnt. They grew up. They moved on. They knew that Jesus was with them. What difference does he make to us in our lives? Jesus reminds them of the miracles and all that was left over, doesn't he? He uses the latest feeding miracle. It's fresh in their minds, the feeding of the 4,000. And he uses it to show them their lack of understanding. This is the low point of the gospel as far as understanding is concerned. It's going to get better from here in. In verse 21, Jesus says, "Do you still not understand?" Within that phrase, I think there is hope. There is grace. Because Jesus isn't dismissing them like the Pharisees were dismissed. You'll get no sign. You're unwilling to understand. These aren't unwilling to understand. They're slow to understand. As I said, there's a big difference. The NRSV translates this verse like this. "Then he said to them, 'Do you not yet understand?'" And that's great, isn't it? Because there's hope. There's hope there. Because Jesus knows they will get to the point where they do understand. And we're going to see that move on next week. The hope is there. Now, things won't finally click into place for them until after the resurrection. But that hope is there. And it's there for us as well. If Jesus isn't centre and central to all that we do, he can be. The hope is there. Do you still not understand? Do you not yet understand? After looking at where the feeding of the 4,000 fits into this gospel, and then the wrong response of the Pharisees, do we realize our need to understand Jesus working in our lives, through us, in all the areas of our lives? I think that's the challenge of this passage. not forgetting about him for days on end or hours on end, but knowing that in every situation we find ourselves, Jesus is with us. Will we start to understand? Will we try to understand? Will we ask him to forgive us for our slowness to understand? Because that's the way forward, isn't it? It's not like that guy on the X Factor who opens the doors and walks out and says, I'm a brilliant singer. Everyone in the world just doesn't realize it yet. Or is it a realization that, yeah, I'm like the disciples. It's so difficult for me to do this. It's difficult for me to understand because it goes against everything that I am. And so I'm going to come before God in prayer and I'm going to humble myself and I'm going to ask him to help me to get it right. The words of verses 17 and 18. Can we reverse those words? Use them as a prayer. Ask God to soften our hard hearts, to open our eyes and ears, and to remember what he is capable of. Because you see, this section isn't a black and white whether you've accepted Jesus yet or not. It's not just about that. You know, the danger of reading through a gospel is that we think, well, we know what it's all about. It's to get people to believe in Jesus. And that's it. And so we can come week in, week out, and think, oh, that's good. You know, the gospel will be preached this morning, and I can think about what I'm having for dinner. The reality for us this morning is how we understand Jesus fits in to our life, into all of our life. Are we growing in our relationship with him and applying what we know to all of our life?